who needs God? Who doesn't need God? Is that a question to ask? It certainly is over here. This is Father Boskin, coming fresh from the Diocesan Assembly and an assortment of other places. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the emotional, the spiritual, the psychological, and the physical. This is episode number 466 of The Next Step, and we're inviting you to take it with us right now.
This is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Vazgen provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The next steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
Now here is my secret. I tell it to you with an openness of heart that I doubt I shall ever achieve again. So I pray that you are in quiet room as you hear these words. My secret is that I need God. These are some words, and we're going to be looking at this. This is from a book by Douglas Coupland, called a book called Life After God. What if I were to tell you why we need God? Actually, I just read this book for the second time. It's a small little paperback that I had bought back in Cupertino, 1994. Just been sitting in my library, and while moving books the other day, the title caught my attention. Once again, Life After God. And without giving away the plot, well, actually, I will give away the plot when I share it with you. Why he needs God. And what I'm going to suggest to you, it's very, very telling in another way too. Why and who does not need God? How about that? Who does not need God? Think about it for a moment. It was actually a beautiful revelation. It just hit me. So how about during the second portion of today's show, okay? Did I get you there, huh? Something to look forward to right after the song today. I've got a great show for you today because we're going to be talking about all kinds of things that bother us about church life, about religion. And speaking of songs, I've got a beautiful one too. My brother up in San Francisco, actually his son, sent me a new CD. Yes, little 8-year-old Vartanik sent me a CD of Mikhail Voskanyan and Friends Band. This is an album called, it's just called Collection Volume 1. I'm going to share that song coming up for the song of the day off of that album. So I'm just like teasing you with all this good stuff that's coming up. I want to start off today's show by sharing with you what I have been up to this past week. Things that you might not even believe. It was great being up in Portland, Oregon over the weekend, where I celebrated the Divine Liturgy at the St. Kevork Armenian Church. And over there met a gentleman named Aram and his wife, who have been longtime listeners of The Next Step of our podcast. Long, long time. So a shout out to Aram. And, I would love to hear from people. I always run across people who say, I've been listening to you for years. I've been hearing it. I would love to know if you're around right now. Let me know. Drop me a line. feedback@epostle.net. Yeah, it would be nice to know in advance before I just run into you, bump into you. Anyway, great meeting you, Autumn, and your lovely wife. I'm sorry, can't remember the name, but lovely wife and lovely couple up there, too. As were all the people in Oregon. You ever get to a church where you just like, everybody's like kind of cool? That's what I found in Oregon at the St. Kevork Church. Kevork, George, Georg, Jorge, the St. Kevork Church. Okay, well, what did I do besides Portland? It happened to be the Diocesan Assembly. And I've shared with you some ideas about this in the past. And every year we go through this ritual of reporting what we have done over the course of the year. It is basically the stockholders meeting. And this is by virtue of here in America, and now it's getting to be more and more throughout the world because the Catholicos is trying to standardize bylaws for the Armenian Church. But basically this democratic process that it does belong, the Church of the People. And I think it was Malachi Ormanian, Archbishop Malachi Ormanian, who mentioned this in his Church of Armenia book. And I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it dates back to him. Malachi Ormanian, probably end of the 19th century, early 20th century. He wrote this volume that is quoted and used until today, The Church of Armenia. It's basically a source book of what the Armenian Church is. And it's been printed many, many times. And probably if you do a little search, you'll find it on the... Okay, yes, we'll do the search for you. We'll probably find a copy of it on the internet and we'll put it on our show notes for you today. Church of Armenia, in it he talks about the Armenian Church being a democratic church in that it has a structure of laity and clergy. It's not like the Roman Catholic Church where it's clergy, but it has clergy and then it is balanced by a group of laity at all levels. So at the parish level, there's a parish priest and a parish council and a parish assembly made up of all the members. At the diocesan level, in other words, a diocese would be a collection of parishes. So at the diocesan level, there would be the clergy, namely the bishop, called primate or prelate, who is in charge of the ecclesiastical, the religious portion of the life, and it is balanced by a diocesan assembly and a diocesan council that works on behalf of that assembly. And one level higher than that, we would have the Catholicosate, that would have, again, clergy with the Catholicos himself and a council of bishops, and then it would have, as its lay counterpart, would have the National Ecclesiastic Assembly as well as the Supreme Spiritual Council. All names to basically separate and delineate and to designate what everyone's responsibility is. And so this past weekend happened to be the Diocesan Assembly, where we get together with all the parishes that belong to this particular diocese. And as we were sitting through there, it just occurred to me, and today I had this beautiful, unexpected visit from my dear daughter-in-law, Lauren. She happened to be in the area, and she texted and said, "Can I stop by?" And you know what? I mean, like, you know, when your kid asks you, "Can I stop by?" Yes, you can stop by. Yes, drop everything. You can stop by. Anyway, she came by, and we were talking about this phenomena of what we have in the church. Namely, the idea that we have a hierarchy, and it's built on this hierarchy, and it's built on this structure of clergy and laity working together harmoniously, or at least you want to believe it's harmonious, right? And I truly believe that, you know, in the end, is with all the small little hiccups here and there, it is guided by the Holy Spirit, and you have to believe that there is that inner harmony, or so you have to work towards, aspire towards. But here's the interesting thing. It's interesting because this is a phenomenon of the Armenian Church, and of course other churches have their own bylaws and they have their own structures. But what's interesting is we expect people to understand this today, when in reality there's really something contradictory. In other words, we call it a democratic church, right? We call it this church of democracy. You have clergy, you have laity, there's votes, and there's structure to this. And this is very very important, especially living in the West, as we are, you know, we are amazed that the longest living democracy, the United States of America, keeps redefining itself and finding itself in transition through peaceful means, without weapons and without wars. It transitions through its leadership and so on and so on. But here's the interesting thing. You can't get somebody to buy into the Armenian church. And that's what we were just talking about when I was talking with her. We were talking about how foreign it is, especially for young people. She was talking about generations and her generation, her and her husband, part of the church and part of the, not only the administrative body of the church, but even more important, part of the worship community of the church. And what is it that keeps people away, especially people of her generation, from this church? And one of the phenomena, I think, that we have is that because of this democracy, we tend to vest a lot of power with the people. And so people believe that, yes, they do have that power, which they should have, right? But that also means that they have the power to resist, yes, and to reject. And we've played into this, and this is a very interesting phenomena, because when we talk about democracy, really, that means you have the ability to reject and form your own. And this is what happens governmentally. See, our government, for instance, here in the United States, I believe it's 10 people. If you get 10 people together, you could form your own church. You can apply for your own nonprofit. And so I could find 10 people who would think, like, let's say a paper cup is God. And if we all agree upon it, that that paper cup is God, and we set up a worship system to this paper cup, and perhaps, you know, invest in paper mills to produce more and more gods and so on and so on, we could have our own structure, we could have our own belief system, and we could be exempt from taxes because that would be our religion, and you couldn't fight that religion. And so when you've got some more, I'm going to use the word, I don't care. Yeah, we're politically incorrect right now at this moment. I try to be, but anyway, at this moment, when you find a real religion that has all the basically the tenets of a supernatural God and belief that we have to attain something higher than ourselves to reach out to something bigger than ourselves. When you have some kind of a legitimate religion that has its structure, we tend to rebel against it because of that structure, because of that rigidity. Here in America, just a couple days, yesterday, not even a couple days, but yesterday, the president fired the FBI director. Now, yeah, I know. You're saying, okay, well, what else is new? I mean, you know, he's been saying you're fired for years, and that's been his motto and everything. But now he's the president, he fired the FBI director. And it was a surprise. It was a surprise move, especially to the FBI director. He was here in Los Angeles, and during the middle of his visit to Los Angeles on official business, he hears that he is fired and he's out. And basically, that's the way the government works, right? Well, not always. Did you know, for instance, now I want you to just remember this because we're going to be talking about the church in the same way. Did you know, for instance, when it came down to selecting the name of what that office, the highest office in the land, would be, there was all kinds of different different proposals that were brought up to the original Congress. People didn't want to call it president. They were thinking of calling it a king, and of course, king would be exactly what they had in England. They were thinking about calling it a chairman. They were thinking about a wide variety of different names to call that position. President, listen to this, president was selected because president basically was like a secretary position, what we would call a secretary position, somebody who basically took the notes and brought everybody together, sort of like a chairman, you know. And so they selected this humble name called president. Well, president, the office of the president, has evolved to the point where now he can go and call the FBI director and fire him. Well, guess where else this is the same? If you look at the structures, right? There's the president who has the generals. The generals have their lieutenants, their captains. Under them are the sergeants who work with the people. Basically, it's the same thing, the same structure as we have within the church. You have a Catholicos, right? Who was supposed to be, the term Catholicos was supposed to be chief among the bishops, but was not to exert a power over them. But it has evolved into that such position. So you have this Catholicos who has his generals, who are the bishops, who place the orders in. You have the lieutenants, who are basically the priests, doing the work on the field, on the ground level. You have the sergeants who round up the privates and the people and basically do the legwork. And so you've got Catholicos, bishop, priest, deacon within the Armenian Church. Just as within the government, within the military, you have your own hierarchy. Now, you can't escape the military. If you do, it's called AWOL. You can escape the church, and that's what I've been saying. Okay, it's interesting because the democracy gives rise to this kind of structure, but democracy also gives the ability for people to walk away from it. And people, by virtue of science itself, right, that tells you that we all aspire, everything, any mass aspires to be, to find its equilibrium. We don't want to be confined. I mean, think about, why is freedom so important? Because we don't want to be confined. We don't want to be held hostage, slavery. So in itself, the system of democracy, it emphasizes that you have a voice. It emphasizes that you will be heard, that there's an equality there. There's liberty. That liberty means you can fight against it. You can reject it. But it also brings about the issue of, how do you structure that democracy? And basically, this is what we're trying to do within the church. And we find that inherent in that democracy is this ability to rebel against it. So a lot of times, young people, especially young people, because face it, when you're young, you just got that energy. You don't want to be confined. And they find it very hard to exist within the confines of such a church, such an institution. And so we beat ourselves up and we say, how do you get young people into church, when all along the structure itself, institutions itself? Think about this. Challenge yourself. Is it really because of the theology? Is it because of the language? Or is it just because inherently people don't want to be confined? They don't want to be in that kind of structure. And so here we are at the Diocesan Assembly, where all kinds of things are explored and talked. It's a meeting of the shareholders, the people who have an investment in the church. Don't look at me like that. We're not talking about financial investment of time, of resources. Yes, financially too, but basically people who are members who say that they want to see the church move forward, and they expect that the leadership will give some kind of accounting to them who are the members. And so we go through this. We go through these structures. And then, of course, there's resentment. Why should we give this kind of accounting when we are not all playing on the same field? And there's all kinds of inner tensions, inner difficulties. And I've gone through 35 of these. Yes, I have paid my dues, okay? This is going to be the 35th year. And I sat through those meetings, and I could tell you, at least if it's not 35, it's maybe 34. Every year I've sat through those meetings, and I've written down notes, intensive notes, during those meetings of what I'm struggling through. That how does this pertain or relate to the concept of Jesus Christ coming to earth? Because isn't that the ultimate goal of all of this? Did somebody mention Jesus Christ along the way? Isn't that the ultimate goal of why we are there, why we have this structure, why we have this institution? But in the end, you know as well as I do that the purpose and the main reason for the existence of any institution is self-preservation. It's very Darwinian. Survival of the fittest. And you have to survive. You have to propagate yourself. You have to find the new members to come in to keep yourself going. And so along the way, you have forgotten what the purpose, the intention of that life is. Rather, the intention of that life, just like Darwin says, you know, it's the propagation of the species. That's the purpose. So you come into this world to leave yourself behind in this world. And it just doesn't work with the church, does it? Because the whole purpose of the church is to go beyond this life. To attach yourself to something higher than this life. So I hope I'm getting this across. It's difficult for me because I'm so into it and I've struggled with this through the years. But I think it just really made sense this year as I was sitting down with my daughter-in-law today, and she says, it just doesn't work. The words don't work. The ideas, the concepts don't work. And it's true. There is this natural rebellion built into us that we want to seek that freedom. We want to find that equilibrium. It's like you bottle up a bunch of water in a bottle. You turn it over. What does it want to do? It wants to spill out and find an equilibrium where everything is equal. One side of that pan of water is not higher. It's equal on all levels. And we reject that kind of hierarchy, which the church has. In the case of the army, the government, in that case, you've got laws that will say that you cannot reject it. You cannot go AWOL. Once you've signed up into the army, you cannot reject it. Once you are in a country, what is the first oath you take to get your citizenship? That you will defend your constitution against. If you want to get a passport, I think you sign it right there, right? I think it's written right into the passport. You will defend your country against enemies, domestic and foreign, and so on and so on. So you're making a vow. But when it comes to religion, no, you can't do that because, well, freedom of choice, freedom of conscience. And so you have, if this religion doesn't work for you, then you can go and become the religion of the paper cup if you wanted to. And so back off a little bit. And understand that really, it's inherent. It's inherent in the religion itself that we reject and we walk away. Now, going through that diocesan assembly, I always think about these things. Like, I look around, and there used to be a time where I was the youngest. I think up until, I think until about 8 or 9 years ago. Yeah, I'm serious about it. No, I'm not joking. I was the youngest one at these assemblies. I mean, that's in my 50s, okay? That was sad. But now we're seeing new generations. I think there's a change, a shift in patterns. And there always is. There's always shift in patterns in how we recognize, and a need also for people to connect with something more stable. When we have gotten off that stable wagon, that instability has prompted us to find something more stable. And that's why today I want to share with you some of these ideas that came from this book, Life After God. So hang on. That's, like I said, it's going to come right after the song today. But going back to the Diocesan Assembly, there I am. I struggle with these ideas, and I push it a little bit. I push it a little bit to find out what is it that makes me tick. Why am I standing there? On the final day of the assembly, they gave awards to something like 60 or 70 people. Seriously, yeah. So yeah, we sat through the award ceremony. Oh man, 60, 70 people. I mean, how serious is this? How real can that be? It's just basically something to appease people. Now, here's the thing. I think I've shared this with you. In fact, I know I've shared this with you too. A wise old man once said to us that people give awards. They give recognitions. Titles are given to people to get their mind off of God. And I always remember this, because Jesus says, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Basically, keep it to yourself. Go and do your work and don't worry about it. And yet, increasingly, we see that where are people honored if not in the churches? Jesus said, if people honor you, then what reward do you expect from God? You've already been rewarded. No, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Basically, do things in a humble manner and do it because it's right, not because you're getting recognition. And yet, what do we do? One more time again, we contradict ourselves by saying that, okay, we want people to come and learn Christianity. We want them to find the way of Christ, the selflessness, the one of committing to things bigger than yourselves. And then once they do that, we applaud them and we give them the recognitions and we build up the ego rather than helping them to lose that ego. So once again, through this ceremony of giving out these awards to 60, 70 people that night, some of them I know and some of them actually, to tell you the truth, pronounced unbelievers. Yeah. Remarkable. Yeah, I'm not doing a judgment call. I'm basically pronounced. They've said, we don't believe. But they're there. Yeah. Why? Because they support the church. For whatever reason it may be. And so, yes, it is a judgment. I shouldn't judge. Let God judge. Maybe they pronounce that they don't believe. But who knows what their hearts are like, right? That's not the point. Here's the point. We say that they are taking away the attention from God, or so says this old man, right? We give awards, we give titles to people to take our attention away from God. But why do we say that about them? Is it because we are looking for that attention? We are looking for that recognition? And that's another difficult one. It's another difficult one when we start criticizing people, and especially when we use this word called hypocrisy. You see, Jesus pointed to people and said, you guys are hypocrites. In other words, you say one thing and you do another thing. But Jesus could say that. Why? Because he wasn't a hypocrite. Because he was pure. Because he was righteous. And so he can say that. We can't. And I've heard this many, many times. In fact, probably I've been guilty of it too in the past. I'm sure I've been guilty of it, right? We in the church, we say that Jesus said, look at the hypocrites. And so I too am going to point to people and say, look, those people are hypocrites. No, you can't do that. Jesus can. You can't. And so here we were at this diocesan assembly with all of these factors at play. And you try to come down with this basic understanding of what is my faith? How easy is the gospel message to love one another, and how complicated we have made it? All right, I've given you enough to think about for right now. Let's put a bookmark in it, and we're going to get back to it in a few moments, okay? Because I'm going to bring in some more concepts, and we're going to try to connect the dots between all of this. Let's take a break right now. Let's listen to our song of the day. Here is Mikhail Voskanyan and the Friends Band. This is like jazz fusion. I hope you enjoy it. I loved it. Big shout out to Vartanig. Thank you very much for sharing this CD with me. And I share it with you, my listeners.
kiss it. Prosilimosum. Sir, the shake of
a little bit of Sayatin over there. Mikhail Voskanyan and the Friends Band. You heard it. I know you heard it. Those of you who are more astute and can decipher those unique tones. Yes, that was the tar. Made famous by minstrels throughout the centuries. That was the tar. And actually what they do is they highlight the tar in Mikhail Voskanyan's work. Let me read you some of the liner notes. It says, the band was formed in 2011 with the goal of introducing jazz to the tar, a folk instrument used across the Caucasus and Iran, immediately standing out as a fresh, modern sound in world music. Voskanyan takes the lead on the tar, known for its long neck and soothing tones. I certainly enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed it too. There will be a link on today's show notes so you could check out not only the band, you could check out the music, and do support the music that we play over here because, hey, there's people who are practicing their creativity. It's important that they hear from us, right? I hope you enjoyed it. Mikhail Voskanyan.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Founded their philosophy on life. Not Vladimir Lenin, but John Lennon gives us this idea of imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try, right? And people kind of wonder, like, how could I subscribe to that if, after all, I'm a priest? And I do subscribe to it because these are points of contention. These are points that have set us apart. Ideas and concepts that have caused wars. We say, yes, we live and die for these concepts. How about living for the concept of healing, for the concept of peace, for the concept of mutual understanding? We're so quick to decide that we're going to give ourselves up for something that's bigger than themselves. How about giving ourselves up for one another? You know, last week, as I was sharing with you, about 60 people got these awards, and the focus became them all of a sudden, right? And now all of a sudden, they start riding a high horse, like, look at me, I've got this. But there's another side to it. People who said, look at me, I don't need this because you know what? I'm into God and I'm into... What do we need to... Why do we need to justify our faith? Go ahead and believe it. Believe it. That's what you believe. So anyway, at the beginning of today's show, I shared with you a passage from a book. And that's where I want to go right now. Why do we need God? Why do we need... Do we need God? And are there people who don't need God, don't need religion? This is a book that I purchased over 20 years ago. Douglas Coupland. It's copyrighted 94, and I do believe I bought it when it was brand new, and it's been sitting in my collection. After I initially read it 20 years ago, I've just got it in my library because it's got a cool name, Life After God. Author Douglas Coupland, it says he's written other books called Generation X and Shampoo Planet. So, the other day, I said, let me read this again. It's a, let's see, what is it, 360 page. It's an easy reading paperback. And I picked it up, and it was interesting. It was kind of captivated me. But it got to the very end, and there's this passage, and that's what I want to share with you right now. I read part of it at the beginning. It says, here is my secret. I tell it to you with an openness of heart that I doubt I shall ever achieve again. So I pray that you are in a quiet room as you hear these words. My secret is that I need God, that I am sick and can no longer make it alone. I need God to help me give, because I no longer seem to be capable of giving. To help me be kind, as I no longer seem capable of kindness. To help me love, as I seem beyond being able to love. Yes, this is why you need God. I mean, he comes to this conclusion right after he writes about all of his adventures and the places he's been. And it was a nice book. Yes, definitely. There'll be a link on today's show notes to the book, to the author. But here's the thing that I want to challenge you with. If these are the reasons why you need God, tell me the reasons why you wouldn't need God. And it was like an eye-opener as I read this. Life After God is the name of the book. Think about that too. And as you read it, you say, well, how does this have to, what does this have to do, life after God? What does that mean, after God? Well, think about who wouldn't need God. It would be children. It would be people who are untainted by this world. Listen, my secret is that I need God, that I am sick and I can no longer make it alone. I need God to help me give because I am no longer seem to be capable of giving. To help, to be kind, as I no longer seem capable of kindness. To help me love, as I seem beyond being able to love. Well, what are you describing? The antithesis is what? Is being a child. And so Jesus says, come to me, let the little children come to me, for to such belong the kingdom of heaven. Well, think about it exactly in these terms. I am sick and can no longer make it alone. Well, who does make it alone? It's kids. They're oblivious to the world around them. There is just a beauty because they live in the eternal now, don't they? I need God to help me give because I no longer seem to be capable of giving. What is that giving? It's what the children do so well. Now, I'm not talking about hoarding stuff and everything. I'm talking about the giving of themselves, the giving of their love and kindness. Help me be kind as I no longer am capable of kindness. Well, there's that kindness in children. And finally, help me to love as I seem beyond being able to love. Well, children, yeah, of course, they have that capability to love. And so who really doesn't need God is children. Do you understand what I'm saying? If the reasons why you come to God is because of the help that you need, children inherently don't need God because they have God within them. To such belongs the kingdom of heaven. And so now you put this in with everything that we've been talking about today, too, about the structure, about the church itself, about hierarchy, about the functioning, and losing sight of what the goal is. And do you need God? Well, of course you do. Of course you do. We talk about the children. What are we talking about? Ones who have not been tainted. As you grow up, sadly, Sometimes it happens very, very early in life. You lose that childhood innocence when it's been, when your life, when your values, your ideals, when the simple things of giving and loving have been lost because of what life dishes out to you. It's been tainted. And you start believing in things, well, that you have control over. And so they put a name on you. They say, you are worthy of this. You are one who is receiving this award. And it takes the focus away from why you were doing it in the first place. Because it was just natural. That's why people do it, right? Because it's natural to find that equilibrium point. To find that peace, to find that giving, to find that love. But we start ascribing different meanings and values to those things. And so all of a sudden, your focus has shifted. You start doing it because there's a reward at the end of it. And religion has fostered this idea of reward. This whole idea of like, and this is why I tell you all the time, don't focus far away. We do this in religion, okay? You're going to be a good person so that God will reward you in a life to come. Don't worry about that life to come. God in his mercy will take care of you. What you need to do is worry about this life right now. And by worrying, I mean focusing. You need to focus on this life right now. Even the second coming, the idea of second coming, is a very foreign one to us in the Armenian Church, in true Armodoxy. And the proof of this is during the Sunday of Advent, namely the second coming. The Bible passage prescribed to us by the Church Fathers is about the first coming, about loving God with all your heart, your mind, and your soul. It's about doing the right thing today. And so when we start looking at these scriptural passages that are assigned to the days, you get a clue of what the theology is and what the meaning and the expressions are. It's interesting because this is consistent throughout the lectionary of the Armenian Church. At every point, you look at what the Bible passage is for that day, and it gives you the pointer of what the focus or the theme has to be. So on the Feast of the Holy Translators, Feast of Mesrop Moshtot, Sag Bartev, the scriptural passage for that day is Christ saying, do not give what is precious to the swine, to the pigs. And so, connect the dots. Why do our church fathers ask us to read that specific passage on that day? Because those translations of those holy works, we're not meant to be thrown out. We're not meant to be tossed in front of swine. But they had the breath of God on them. And therefore, that breath of God is something that is life-giving and life-generating, and we need to revere it, to keep it in its sacredness. So, looking at the scriptural passage for the day, you understand what that theme is and how the Church Fathers wanted you to process that theme. And so when you think about the Second Coming, look at what they've given you to read. It's not about the Second Coming, Jesus says clearly. That's none of your business. Get your nose out of it, basically, he's saying. But what does he do? What does he say? Well, he says, set your mind on God's kingdom today, and all else will come to you. And how do you set that your mind on God's kingdom? By loving the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, and soul every single day. Not for something to come, but because that is the way to finding reconciliation and harmony here in this world. You see, broken down this way, you understand that religion has a very important function in bringing together people. Not about separating them and saying, I'm better than you. Or, hey, look at me. I've got this award. Or, hey, look at me. I understand better than everybody else. And therefore, I can judge and make damn sure that no one judges me. You see, the beauty of Christianity is when you could strip it away the hoopla and understand that Christ's message was so pure and so sincere, it wasn't about separating us, but about bringing us together. About each and every one of us understanding our responsibility in life. Not somebody else's, but what is your responsibility? Why do you live as a Christian? What is it that makes you a Christian? And what is the Christian message that pushes you so you do the right thing? And so with that, I challenge you, who really doesn't need God? It's the people that are already there. And those people are the little kids. Before the tainting, before they've gotten into their patterns. So let me make this really clear before I get all kinds of letters and all kinds of emails and calls and people saying, what's the matter with you? Our children need God. Our children need to pray in school, blah, 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 blah. Just relax. Take a chill pill, okay? Listen to what's being said over here. It's that imagine there's no religion. It's like that religion is separating us is what's bad. It's not about imagine there's no heaven or hell. Imagine that there's no love for it to the point that we would kill other people for it, that we would separate ourselves from one another. And yes, children, Jesus says, let the children come to me, for to such belong the kingdom of heaven. What is he saying? Take a cue from the children. Learn from the children. We are so fast to say, we got to raise our children to be like us. And Jesus turns that around and says, look at the kids. They haven't been tainted. Learn from them to be pure. And in this situation, as I'm saying it like this, yes, they're the ones who are already at one with the kingdom of heaven. Yeah, they don't need God. They don't need that idea of God that we are floating around as a separatist, as somebody who separates us into our camps and requires us to fight, requires us to kill one another for that concept that we hold in our head. God is about love. It's about unconditional love, about service, about caring, about reaching out. So these things happened at the Diocesan Assembly. These things are things that I've thought about and contemplated and just wanted to share with you. I'm going to let Susie make her final announcement. When I get back, I'm going to make some announcements of all kinds of fun things that have happened and share with you what's going to happen, okay? You do want to stay tuned for that. Here's Susie right now.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vosgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vosgen.
Well, thank you very much, Susie, and thank you to all of you for all of your kind wishes, your support for this ministry, this broadcast. I want to do a few shout-outs because we had a great, great week. As I told you, I was at the Diocesan Conference Assembly, and there I even gave a presentation on social media, believe it or not. Yeah, they picked me out, and I had prepared this a few slides. Let's say maybe sometime in the future, next week, week after, we'll do something. We'll convert it to a podcast presentation. It was kind of interesting, not only and you as podcast listeners know most of it, but it was interesting in the questions that it solicited. And I think that's a pleasant one to talk about in the future. A couple of shout outs, a dear friend of ours, Lilo. She graduated with her master's in family therapy. Lilo's been one of our girls that has worked with us, and you've heard her on podcasts. She's done a few of the intros and everything. Anyway, we wish her all the best as she now goes to the next level of getting her doctorate degree. Big shout out to our dear, dear friend, Dr. Hadar Dekmejian. He's a professor at USC Political Science. The reason why I got involved when I moved down to Southern California, he opened the doors to the chaplaincy at the University of Southern California to me. And we were able to do for so many years different kinds of youth ministry, whether it was on the campus, and later it evolved into the youth ministry in Glendale, really the architect for what we did in Glendale. So big shout out to him, as the university itself honored him last week, and we had a chance to go out there, and the marching band, the USC marching band was there. It was fantastic. So wish him all the best, along with his lovely wife, Anush. Together, they've been a support. They've been a backbone to us in the ministry. And here's a couple that it's not about the priest. It's about the church. It's about their love of Christ. And I remember when I left St. Peter in Glendale, the priest had asked me about different people, and what do you say? And these were one of the people that I said, you know what? These are people that no matter what, it's about the church. Priests come and go, but it's about the church. And isn't that a beautiful way to reflect on the church, a beautiful way to reflect on your devotion to the church? It's not about people. It's about the concept, about Christ's holy body and making it work. So big shout out to him, health and happiness as he moves on. They called it a retirement party, but it's not a retiring. He's the last person who could retire. He's constantly working, and he's working on his newest ventures right now, a grant that he's fulfilling. So wish him all the best. And finally, big shout out to Arsevon. Yes, today is his birthday. And that is a really special day for us, because the adventures that happened on his birthday, one day I got to share that with you. It was just, why not right now, huh? No, I can't. He was born 4:01 in the morning, and just a delight. He changed our life. We became from 2 to 3, and then we became 3 to 4, and later on we became 4 to 5, but and actually we even became 6, right? Didn't we? Yes. We got a daughter-in-law, too. But he was number 4 in the family, Sevan, and we wish him all the best. A lot of health and happiness and good days ahead. What we say, Alef Shad Orer. No, that's not a twist of Susie's name. That's actually an expression, Alef Shad Orer. Days of sunshine to all of the good people that we remember over here. So that about wraps it up over here. And I want to get on your calendar a couple dates. July 7th, that's going to be the Decennial Forgiveness Concert Conference, excuse me. And we are planning in the Santa Barbara area. The venue has not been finalized, but put it on your calendar. July 7th, 8th, 9th. It's that weekend. It's how many times should we forgive? 7 times 77. Happens to be July 7th, 17, 7717. We're going to get together. Put it on your calendar. And the other one that I would love it if you put it on your calendar is going to be September 24th. And it's a Sunday. It's the Feast of Varaka Chach. And we are going to celebrate the 35th anniversary of this ministry. I've got a lot to share with you. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be in Los Angeles, very close to the LAX airport, at the St. James Armenian Church, where I was ordained. And there'll be a lot more coming up about that as well. So with that, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Love to hear from you. Drop us a line at feedback@epostle.net. Give us a call. Check us out on Facebook, all different kinds of personalities. Drop us a line there, whatever it takes, get in touch. But more importantly, get in touch with your faith, get in touch with your church, and get in touch with some people to make a difference in this world. Hey, listen, on behalf of the wonderful people who are making a difference in our life, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of VPostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath. Cut out!